think my whole life changed once I realized that I could create and sell my own products online. It's like I could create a one-man marketing machine that ran without me once I set it up, which was so different to the day jobs and freelance work that I had been doing up to that point. My real success came when I was able to sell the products that I wanted to sell. It all started with private label products on Amazon and continues to this day. I feel everyone has a potential business inside them. Starting a real business isn't a walk in the park, and private labeling is no exception. But for a person with dedication, determination, and a modest amount of capital, this could be the business that makes all the difference for that person. It certainly was for me. I want you to create your business, and there are so many benefits to it. I describe exactly how you can do it in the 10 Steps to Building Your Own Private Label Business Guide. There are no strings attached. Just get it for free at amazingfba.com/build. That's amazing, F for Freddy, B for Bertie, A for Alpha.com/BUILD. That's amazingfba.com/build.
I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. So, folks, welcome back to the show. Sorry I've been somewhat absent from your ears and eyes recently. Maybe it's a relief to you, but I'm trying to produce value for you. And if it is valuable, I'm sorry to have been absent. I'm back. Been working very, very hard on two, not Amazon-y things, but related to you, the beloved listener and watcher, reader as well. So two things that might be of interest. One is a wonderful guide that we've had created with our new designer, and that is called Build, simply the 10 steps to creating a private label business from scratch. And I think that there's some stuff in there that even the more experienced people might find of great interest, actually. So we've done our best to make it very easy to consume and quick and pleasant to consume. The new version's coming out. You can still get hold of the old version, which is the same basic content, at amazingfba.com/build, B-U-I-L-D. And also we've been working on the private label process course, which is a paid course. The full price is £395, or about $500. Made a strategic decision to make it available to anyone with existing e-commerce turnover of at least £500, so $600, $650 a month or more, for £100 off, or $130 roughly. And the reason for that is simple, because I want to build a community of people that I can work with in future or refer to who are action takers, and people who've already taken action are the best, most likely to take future action, given that past activity, past behavior, past actual facts, as opposed to what people say, is the best prediction of the future, right? So given that, if that interests you, get yourself over to amazingfba.com/PLP. That's P for Peter, L for Lima, P for Peter. Sorry for the little plug. We can get on with the show now, but that's what I've been busy doing. And what I want to talk to you about today is managing outsourcers and a couple of things about that from a very sort of hands-on, early-ish days type perspective. So I'm not talking about from the perspective of somebody who's got a beautiful system. I'm still kind of thrashing around with some of this stuff in my Amazon businesses and also in the Amazing FBA space as well now. But a couple of learnings. First of all, if you have any kind of turnover and you're ambitious to grow and you're struggling for time, then a VA really is the solution. And I'm not saying this as an abstract idea that I read about or that I'm an affiliate for somebody, so I ought to try and push their products or whatever. I'm saying this from cold hard experience of myself. And I've got three sets of people to share about, two of which are very relevant for Amazon, one of which is more for influencers if you're trying to build a bigger picture business. So the one that's not relevant first, let's deal with the longest standing, is my editor, Daniel, who's been editing the podcast for well over 100 episodes now. I don't know how long it's been and exactly how many episodes, but Daniel, if you're listening, hats off to you, my friend. He's actually American, and because it deals with fluency and understanding spoken English, that's obviously important to have a native speaker of the language. And that brings me to one point, which is Tim Ferriss's very accurate statement, which is, don't worry about cost per hour, worry about cost per completed task. I actually tried out a few people before Daniel from Fiverr, before we got working with him, and the results are actually quicker and cheaper with Daniel, even though he's American and thus has higher living standards and higher per hour charges than some other people, because probably the native speaker aspect and also being a diligent, great guy. So hats off. Thanks, Daniel, if you're listening. very nice to be able to praise your staff whilst doing marketing at the same time. Actually, it's a really cool thing. I like it. So I will continue to do that. So recognize my lovely peeps who give me help. Now, that is not anything like a full-time position. Daniel's very busy editing lots of people's podcasts these days. But, you know, we spend anywhere from 100 to 500 bucks a month, depending on how many podcasts we're producing. So the first thing to say about that is, apart from the question of, you know, is it always cheaper to go to India or the Philippines? Not always, although I have got a Filipino that I want to mention in a second. So that's the first thing. The second thing is just about where you spend your money. You really should be spending your money in the early days of a business where it is going to make a return quickly, because cash and cash flow are critical to a startup, right? So if you're just starting out with Amazon, you have no cash flow at all, okay, that's a slightly different position. But if you are just starting out with a real business, i.e. you've got some cash flow now, you've got some revenue, the first place you want to spend your money is either on producing a wonderful product to sell, because then you get happy customers and great reviews, and that becomes a virtuous cycle that way, or you want to spend it bringing traffic in. Now, for me, for Amazing FBA, the podcast is a traffic source, and it's basically influencer marketing, and I'm the influencer, quite a small one, relative to some of the bigger names in the Amazon podcast space or Amazon YouTube space, but nevertheless an influencer. Now, as a beginning Amazon seller, you may not wish to be the influencer yourself, but you will definitely need to spend money on traffic, and that might be working with other influencers and maybe paying them to endorse your product or to talk about it on their podcast or on their YouTube channel, or even you can sponsor their podcast channel, for example, right? So that's an example of using the money at the front end of the funnel, if you like, the where the traffic comes from. And if you're looking to expand outside of Amazon, the first thing to do, of course, on Amazon is to spend it on Amazon ads. Just make sure you measure carefully. Amazon ads can be an amazing place to get launch traffic, probably more powerful than ever, I should say, but as an ongoing thing, you've got to look at the numbers. So that's the first place that I spend my money on a VA, is that front end to bring in traffic. And the more you're looking off Amazon and trying to create your own Shopify store or the halfway house of bringing traffic onto Amazon from your own control rather than just relying on Amazon traffic, then that's the sort of place that I would look at spending money. And you might, for example, spend money on somebody to create some articles or even reach out to influencers for you. And you could approach a blogger. I'm like, I have a blog and I have people reach out to me and say, Mike, can you post our post for you? And some people will pay me a little bit of money to do that. It reminds me, I must email somebody back about that. So that's one place to spend your money. And it could be an outsourcer to do it. It could be paid. I quite a fan of content marketing, as you can tell from the fact that I've got a podcast. And I think it's because it creates a warmer, better relationship with people than just adverts. Now, I'm not saying I'm anti-adverts, do whatever works, but that would be one place to spend money on a VA. For example, if you're just looking to expand off Amazon, in the sense that you still sell on Amazon, but you're driving traffic from off Amazon, that could be great. So, for example, pay a writer to create some blog posts and then hawk the blog posts around to relevant blogs in your space. For example, let's say you sell, a podcast microphone stand. Well, guess what? You probably want to be talking to people who have podcasts about podcasting, and there are quite a few of them out there. And of course, I listen to them as a podcaster, and I'm influenced by the people who are the big names. So that would be a win for you, for example. You can also pay somebody to reach out manually to influencers. That's another use of VAs, right? So it's example number one, that's Daniel. And that's the use of the person is to create traffic, basically, was to create content that brings in traffic to the sites. In my case, it brings in traffic to Amazing FBA. In your case, it might bring it straight to your Amazon listing, whatever your strategy is. And that's America. Okay. So lesson there, cost per completed task, not necessarily cost per hour. The opposite extreme, we've got Gary in the Philippines, who does work for $5 an hour. I hope he doesn't mind me mentioning that. He's probably not going to be listening to this podcast because he's not involved in the podcast editing, because that requires a different level of English. However, his English is good, don't get me wrong. I mean, I was amazed. His written English is excellent, and we communicate 100% by written. It's mostly Skype. Sometimes we use Trello management, project management software. But either which way, Gary has been working on the other stuff, which is building a product to sell, which is more or less the same function that a Chinese supplier performs in my Amazon business. And except with him that I've sort of co-created the product, I've sort of designed it and done everything else as well. And to begin with, it was me being chief cook and bottle washer. And what I've realized gradually over the months of building this course is that the extent to which, by becoming more and more systematic and clear in my own mind about the process of creating stuff, I can delegate more and more to somebody because I'm clearer about what needs to be done. I'm clear about what the result should look like. And I'm also therefore clear about the process as well. And that means that I can delegate. So delegation is a bit chicken and egg here. So one principle I would pull from this is that there is something very powerful about the low hourly rate if you get somebody competent. And this chap is very competent, also being chained up by my business partner, Rob, who's a very bright guy as well, and has done a great job of training Gary in working in a certain systematic way. And, you know, so that's all come about through some hard work and training, but he is a fantastic guy and the hourly rate is low enough that means I can afford to delegate plenty of stuff to him without that breaking the bank and creating cash flow issues for me. So that's another example. Now, really the chicken and egg thing with outsourcing is this: if you wait until you're fully ready to outsource and you've created your SOPs, I don't think you're ever going to do it. Now, you might if you're a very pure and orderly kind of person. Personally, I'm not really, but when I have to explain something to somebody, that maybe it's because I've naturally been a teacher, and maybe that's why I started the podcast in education, effectively business education, but whatever the reason, for me, having somebody there that I have to explain stuff to forces me to make the explanation. And the explanation itself, if I capture that, becomes then a standard operating procedure, or at the very least a task. So for example, I was just literally Skyping Gary before this call because I thought I'm desperate to make some content and get it out to my peeps, as you, my peep in your case. I really, really want to reconnect. I feel like I've not been out there enough on podcasts and YouTube and what have you. And at the same time, I've created a bunch of PDFs, downloadable PDFs, which are going to add lots of value to the course members who bought the private label process course and to the future buyers of it as well, thus leading to future happy referrals and testimonials. So very much like on Amazon, I'm looking to create a happy experience for the consumer so they give me reviews and, of course, hopefully refer it, you know, mention it to their friends as well. So same basic principles, no different. Business is business. Online business is online business, right? The only difference being that I get to sort of control the testimonial process a little bit more, but on the other hand, we don't have that mechanism that Amazon has in place for review. So same difference. Anyway, so the point here being that I'm using somebody by employing somebody to do stuff and then chucking stuff at them. In order to articulate what I'm saying, I have to create a process. And actually, even if Gary stops working with me for whatever reason, I hope he doesn't, because he's a great guy and you should hang on to great people for life because they change your business, your life, right? Really life-saving. Because right now he's doing his stuff and I'm doing this, and only I can do this, right? So Gary can't come on and do my podcast for me. Although Greg Mercer recently seems to have been employing some of his Filipino fantastic staff to do exactly that at Jungle Scout. So maybe that's something I need to question, right? But, you know, it's best to focus on the thing you do best. And you maybe not only do, but you can do best, or you think you can do best, and get rid of the rest of it. So in my case, for example, creating a standard operating procedure or a process was no more complicated than I wrote a desperate, rather unstructured Skype message saying, help, do this. Then I looked at it, I thought, this has a potential for mess. And actually, Gary doesn't like mess, and quite rightly, he wants clean, proper delegation. So I thought, and I rewrote it a bit more orderly, and I thought, hang on a second. Then I copied and pasted that over into a Trello board, and I copied something else. So Trello is very, very good project management system. It's called a Kanban system, which is basically like a series of cards that you move from to do to doing to done. If in doubt, check it out. You can get it for free, Trello.com. This, I'm not an affiliate or anything. I probably should be, because I use it all the time. Pretty much all my Amazon seller friends, like the power sellers, I'm talking about serious people, use Trello or another one whose name escapes me. We'll put it in the show notes. It'll be amazingfba.com/297 for this episode, by the way. And I can't remember. It's Asana, A-S-A-N-A. That's it, Asana or Trello, T-R-E-L-L-O. Either seem very, very similar. I remember Rob and I, in our typical exhaustive, detailed approach, did an exhaustive comparison of the two and decided Trello was fractionally better. That was probably about a year ago. So, you know, they're both pretty similar. Anyway, so there's an example of when you get somebody great, going through delegation forces you to systematize your process. And of course, if I spend a lot of my time on $5 an hour tasks, like uploading PDFs to an online system, which is very mechanical, in order to increase the customer experience, that's it should be done in order to just increase the probability of happy customers, referrals, testimonials, or reviews, same idea. But I need to be careful of where I'm focusing my time. And the solution is delegate clearly to this person. And then I've also captured that process, and I can also then reuse that process either with Gary in future, if I create a new course in future, or if I expand on existing stuff, we can use the same system, or if Gary leaves and I work with somebody else, I can use the same thing. So there's a couple of examples there. So the Philippines, also definitely worthwhile place to look for outsourcers, don't get me wrong. The third place, Eastern Europe, if you're placed in the UK particularly, is an interesting place. It's not somewhere, again, that I would naturally go to. This person's a designer, Joanna, and based in Poland. Now, I came across Joanna from 99 Designs. 99 Designs is an excellent place to get designs if you use it in a certain strategic way that my coach Jason Miles of Winning on Shopify taught me, which is basically to set up contests such that you can sort of play people against each other. And the trick is to use the review system. So 3, 4, 5 stars. You can say, this is a 3-star, this is a 4-star. All the different contestants in a contest can see that, and you can end up with them sort of competing with each other to sort of home in on a better version of what you want. That's put it in a nutshell. I mean, I can probably talk about this on a separate podcast if you're interested. By the way, if you are interested in hearing particular things from me, get yourself to the Facebook group. That's probably the best place to flag up things with me, or you can email, but Facebook group is best. amazingfba.com/FBF, as in face, B as in book. We've got about 1,350 members there or something now, quite small. But there's some useful content there, some useful members. So by all means, let me know if there's anything you want me to do a topic about. I'm always, any topic I should say you want me to do a podcast about, always interested to hear from what you want and always happy to provide it. You know, definitely will listen to my customers if they speak. So speak to me and I will deliver. So, where on earth was I? I was talking about the 99 Designs. So the point here is I found this person through 99 Designs, like I found Daniel through Fiverr, Gary came via a business partner. So outsourcers can end up coming from various different sources, really. But 99 Designs, found somebody to do the web design for our new website for the new podcast 10K Collective, which will be coming out probably January, February 2019, which is going to be geared to the needs of people who've got existing turnover on Amazon. So broadly speaking, six-figure sellers upwards. So those doing about £8,000 or dollars a month, something like that, $10,000 a month, roughly. So that's what that's about. And that's why Joanna got involved. I've had designers in the past that I've worked with, a British designer who is very good, who worked in the past with me on some physical product designs, not the actual product, but the packaging, I should say, and the logo. Also very good, again, recommended by a personal friend, in that case, a photographer. And I may go back to her in the future as well. It's good to have more than one option. So British can work as well for the things that add a lot of value. Now, here's what I would say, that a designer adds so much value or perceived value, that really beautiful packaging and really beautiful photographs. So that's more of a photographer thing than a designer. But if you've got infographics on your Amazon listing, then it's probably a designer and a photographer. They add so much value because the perception in a visual medium like the internet is so critical that I really think it's worth spending good money. So I've spent about $200 with Joanna getting her to just design a free downloadable PDF. So it's not even a paid product. Why on earth would I do that? Again, to answer the question, so if I look at my marketing funnel, and even if you just sell on Amazon, you need to start thinking in these terms if you want to break out of just being dependent on Amazon 100%, which is probably not wise, as we all know if we hear the stories. So the funnel means things like you need to get a traffic source. In my case, I'm talking about podcasts, and I've been using a VA there to increase the speed with which I can create content and thus get more people into the funnel. Once people listen to the podcast, quite a few people come and check out the blog. At that point, they can then opt in for things like a free PDF, like the one we're creating, which would be fantastic, beautiful, easy to consume, very clearly written, because we spent about 30 hours on it so far, probably more in terms of total man hours or person hours. I personally will have ended up spending 30 hours on it by the time it's done, I think. Why would I do that? Because the value of people on my list, as long as I keep a good relationship with them, is really, really critical. Now, that's all within Amazing FBA. And then I need to work on the nurturing the list bit. So I want to start doing a better and better job for you guys of just listening to what people need and responding. If, for example, somebody clicks on a link which is about sourcing, I will probably try and send them more materials about sourcing. So free videos, free PDFs, link them to podcast episodes that are relevant, etc. Right? So trying to give people what is relevant to them. And at the other end of the funnel, they'll need to deliver fantastic products. In this case, the digital product of the private label process course, and then make sure that's really, really good. And again, I've got a VA or a person outsourced working on that. All right. So if you think about it, what I'm spending money only in the places where I believe that is ultimately going to produce a return. First of all, creating wonderful products and making sure that people enjoy the experience of using the product. And that's been exactly the same with my private label products, no different. I've worked on creating a beautiful sort of preliminary to that to get people on my list, which I haven't really done with e-commerce products yet. But certainly if you're doing a Shopify-based strategy, then that would be very, very wise to do that. And then also been working on the creating the top of the funnel, if you like, getting traffic from people who listen to the podcast channel and to some extent, of course, YouTube, which may be where you're consuming this right now. And again, those are things you can do straight away on your Amazon business. And you can start your own YouTube channel or for that matter podcast about a particular area. Or even simply, you can reach out to people who work, already have built an audience, and you know, go and approach them with your product. And tell them that you're interested in some kind of affiliate deal. So I hope that little ramble through my use of VAs currently makes sense. It's not easy to just make simple sense of this for you, and it may sound too general. You know, this is probably not one for the newbies. That's okay. But the more you go into trying to grow up as an online marketer, whether it's in e-commerce or anything else, but particularly e-commerce sellers, and they get very, very Amazon-centric. And I think that's very dangerous, but it's also lazy intellectually, because it's not necessary to do that. Amazon does something like 54% of all e-commerce, i.e. physical product searches online, start on Amazon now, which is crazy. I think that's probably for the US. Don't know how globally true that is, but it's pretty massive. And something like 51% of all online searches full stop. So it's beginning to be a search engine, right? So like Google, it starts to look like the earth on which we walk because it's so omnipresent. But that's not true. Amazon provides discrete, i.e. separate functions, one of which is to find people who are looking, to attract those people. The second thing is sort of portal to the internet. The second thing is to win their trust as trusted buyers. So they've often got their credit card on get on file, which is one big step up from Google, obviously. The third thing is they have the trust, so they get the conversions and sales. So it's a sales channel. And then the other thing is they are a fulfillment channel as well. In other words, they can physically store your products for you and fulfill it for you if you're doing FBA, fulfilled by Amazon. But it doesn't have to be all of those things. For example, you can decide to create a marketing channel via YouTube and drive traffic or even tap into somebody else's existing marketing channel, i.e. work with an existing influencer and get them to drive potentially very good, lucrative traffic to your Amazon listing. So then the Amazon listing is still the sales channel and you can still sell via FBA, fulfilled by Amazon. You are still using Amazon, but only for some of your sort of whole funnel, if you like, your marketing or sales funnel, or your business funnel as a whole, if you like. Another way you could do things would be, for example, to send traffic to your website by creating, for example, a blog or something like that that pulls things in, or SEO by writing articles. Then you can send them off to Amazon to buy, because Amazon gets amazing conversion rates because everyone trusts Amazon, or consumers trust Amazon rather. And then you could do fulfilled by merchant, in which case you're using your blog as a marketing channel, getting the traffic, using Amazon as a sales channel, making the sale, getting the conversion, which they are amazing at. And then you can use your 3PL, what's the word in English? A warehouse, that's what I'm looking for, to do your actual fulfillment. But again, you can use Amazon as part of that mix, but you don't have to. So this is maybe more advanced thinking that quite a lot of people are used to thinking. That's okay. I'm here to challenge your brain. But what I'm coming back to is, if you think in those terms, then you can start to make more clear-minded decisions about where to spend your money, including on staff, because staff spent on anything or on outsourcing anything that will bring traffic in or increase conversions or increase customer satisfaction ultimately should become a positive feedback loop. If you have happier customers, they leave more reviews. If you increase conversions, you make more sales. And if you increase traffic, everything else that follows it should increase as well. So those are the areas that I would suggest you spend money on if you're looking to use VAs first. It's very tempting to do things like getting rid of tasks that you really hate, like in my case, bookkeeping. But often that's a bit risky because it increases your overhead, but doesn't actually increase your income, nor will it in future. Now, it doesn't mean you shouldn't start outsourcing things like that, but you need to be more wary of that because the financial return on investment is harder to justify. For that reason, for example, I've been working with a bookkeeper recently. I didn't delegate well to him because I didn't actually go through the processes myself first. I just kind of shoved it to him and said, do this. So that's known as abdication rather than delegation. And so unsurprisingly, I'm not getting a good result from him. So that I may cease that relationship. But the other ones are an example of very, very fruitful, great return on investment type relationships. So I'd really urge you, if you're in the early-ish stages of you've got turnover on Amazon or some kind of e-commerce, and you're going, yeah, but I feel overwhelmed, I really encourage you to go back out into that VA space and really explore doing that. I mean, some people, we've got somebody in the £1 million mastermind that I've just started running. He's doing $150,000 a month, or pounds a month, I should say. It's about £1.8 million a year. Doesn't even have a VA, which on the one hand is amazing and hats off to you, my friend. You know, we've all got things to learn from that. But the other thing is, but how much better could you do if you just took some of that money and put it into something that increased, that had got a return on investment in one of those things, so getting your traffic up, increasing your conversions, increasing customer satisfaction, and thus positive reviews. And I think the answer is it could really blow his business up in a great way. So if you have got turnover and you are considering VAs, I really urge you to be willing to get in there. If you've, you know, kissed a few frogs before you found your prince, then keep going. Because when you found your prince, to extend the metaphor to Breaking Point, trust me, it's just fantastic. I mean, right now I've got a very intelligent and talented designer in Poland beavering away, creating a wonderful report for you guys for free, why to build goodwill and happiness and to get you, you know, give you warm feelings towards me in the podcast, because that creates rapport and relationship. It's all about the relationship with the people on your list, right? And then Gary is busy uploading the PDFs that I created to the course. Why? Customer satisfaction. Why is that? Apart from keeping people happy, referrals and testimonials or reviews in Amazon Speak. So that is what I really think you should be considering spending your money on first with VAs. And be delighted to answer any questions you have around this topic, insofar as I have any wisdom to share, on the Facebook group amazingfba.com/FB, F as in face, B as in book. Thank you so much for listening or watching. Sorry it was a bit of a ramble, but I hope some clear themes have emerged from this. So I guess there's a dual theme. Think in terms of marketing funnels, even if you're just on Amazon at the moment. And think in terms of where your VAs will produce a return on investment. And if you think in those terms and keep working, good things are bound to happen. By the way, most people don't think that way. So if you even begin to get your brain spinning that way, it may take a while to get your head around it, that's okay. But if you do, then you're ahead of most people, because they're just looking for tactical tweaks. Like, what's the magical tool that's going to solve my problem? And the answer is there ain't one. Yeah, chatbots are great at the moment. And we'll certainly be getting Paul Harvey back on to talk about that, because I think he's the man, and definitely the tool du jour. You know, it's the fashionable thing that's working right now. But the tool is only as good as the person who wields it. So for that, you need the old desktop computer working. So hope this has helped. Thanks for listening. Speak to you in the next podcast.
That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now, over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs, give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few, then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.